This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this U.S. politics edition of the program, the politics of abortion, an epidemic of mass shootings, and the midterm election landscape. Hello again. I'm Carol Castillo. In the wake of the leaked draft Supreme Court opinion in early May indicating that the landmark 1973 law protecting a woman's constitutional right to an abortion may be overturned, to what extent will abortion rights be a factor in the November midterm elections? Will the recent mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas move the needle on national gun safety legislation? Analysts say that the foremost gun rights lobby, the National Rifle Association, does not hold as much sway as it used to. Organizations dedicated to eliminating the epidemic of gun violence, like March for Our Lives, a youth-led movement which grew out of the tragic school shooting in Parkland, Florida in 2018, are gaining ground in the court of public opinion. We will also examine the outcome of several Democratic and Republican primary elections in the key swing states of Ohio, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and elsewhere. To what extent are they bellwethers of former President Donald Trump's influence on the Republican Party? And what do the Democratic primary results signal regarding the direction of the Democrats? For more on these issues, we turn to our veteran analysts. John Fortier is political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler. He is executive vice president for policy at Third Way, a center-left policy group also based here in Washington, and they join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Great to be here.
Gentlemen, let's first assess some outcomes of recent Democratic and Republican primary elections in a number of key states. And let me remind our listeners, these are elections where several members of the same political party vie to be their party's nominee for the general midterm election in November. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives and about one-third of the 100-seat Senate are being contested, along with some very important state races. The upcoming midterms will determine the shape and control of the next House of Representatives and Senate in January 2023. So first to you, John Fortier, identify some key primary races for us, like Ohio, Pennsylvania, maybe Georgia, and what they say both on the Democratic and Republican side about the type of candidates being elected, and to what degree do they reflect perhaps the influence of former President Donald Trump on the Republican side?
Well, first, I think we should remember that this is likely to be a good Republican year because of it's a midterm election with a Democratic president. The president's ratings are low. And so there are a lot of races that Republicans are excited about running and gaining in seats in the House, the Senate, governorships, state legislatures. That being said, some of these primary elections can make a difference. I think the wave will be strong for Republicans, but in some cases, they probably pick some candidates that are weaker and might dampen some of their chances. If I wanted to look at several places, I'd look at some of the states that were very close in the last election. Those are Georgia and Arizona, Pennsylvania, and we've had North Carolina, Ohio to some extent, although not as close. We've had some primaries in these places. I guess I would say, you know, in many places, Republicans are looking good and that they will have gains. There are some places where there are some doubts about this. I point to the Pennsylvania governor's race, where a candidate who is not only pretty strongly Donald Trump, but has some associations with January 6th, might be too radioactive to win, even in a good Republican year. There's a candidate which, you know, Republicans may endanger their chances. But if I were to look at races, I'd look at places that Republicans could do well. Certainly in Georgia, we've had primaries. Several of the non-Trump candidates have come through the Republican primaries, but also Herschel Walker, who was a Trump electee. They're likely to be good candidates going forward. As for Trump, Trump has always had a mixed bag in the way that he's endorsed people, even when he was in office, but I think arguably more now. And some of his endorsements are based on Republican principles. Some of them may be more personal vendettas about people who haven't supported him and his battle to win the last election. And so I think it was a mixed bag. He definitely supported some people who made a difference. Someone like J.D. Vance in Ohio is a good example. But in other places, he's switched his nomination, or sometimes his nomination might actually not be helpful to the party. And in a couple of key places in Georgia, in the Secretary of State and governor's race, he made some prominent endorsements, and those people lost the election. So I don't know that it means Donald Trump is particularly weak or particularly strong, but he certainly has a mixed record and in some places has not looked good in the people that he's endorsed.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, John Fortier says former President Donald Trump has a mixed record so far in the primaries with respect to Republicans he's backed. I'd like you to hone in on states like Pennsylvania and Ohio and tell us what trends you see so far in the Republican and Democratic primaries.
I think there's three stories so far in this race, and I agree with John. Story number one is this is going to be a tough year for Democrats. Historically, the first midterm after a presidential election is very bad for the party in power. There's no reason to believe this will be any different. The next story is Donald Trump. And I also agree with John that Donald Trump has a mixed record in these primary elections thus far. But this week, he really got bloodied. I mean, he really got taken to the mat in Georgia. And this is where this was vendetta politics. And Georgia is ground zero for the January 6th false complaints about the election being stolen. And the two Republicans on the ballot, the governor Kemp and the Secretary of State Raffensperger, were both enemy numbers one and two for Donald Trump. And they had legitimate, big name, big time candidates running against them. And not only did these candidates win, they won in somewhere between a landslide, which is what Kemp did, to just a solid knockout win for Raffensperger. And what this means, if you think about politicians, they're not leading indicators, they're lagging indicators. They're wondering where voters are and can they catch up to them. This was a Republican voter repudiation of Donald Trump, really in a place where you don't expect it. So this is really interesting to look at going forward. And then the last thing I would say, story number three, is while it's a tough year for Democrats, the primaries thus far, Democrats have been emerging with solid candidates in races, and Republicans also a mixed bag, some iffy candidates in some races. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, John Fetterman won the Democratic nomination for the Senate race in Pennsylvania. And he's a very interesting sort of cross-cultural candidate that I think can have appeal in some Trump areas. On the Republican side, they haven't picked a winner. This is going to a recount. The winner of this race will be the one not with the most ballots, but with the best lawyers. So here is a state that could be decided really because the Republicans got very divided. They're going to come out of this race with one side very angry that the election was, quote unquote, stolen from them. So it might give Democrats a chance to exceed normal, which is to do poorly, but not awfully in the 2022 midterms.
Indeed. Well, the state of Pennsylvania, our native state, Jim, you're from the East, I'm from the West, is going to be very interesting with the 6'8" tall, tattooed and goateed John Fetterman, who beat the more conservative centrist politician, Congressman Connor Lamb, in the Democratic primary. And then we have to mention, too, that John Fetterman had a stroke right before the primary. He still won over Connor Lamb. Will be very interesting to see if the Democrats can flip that Senate seat currently held by a Republican. So that's something to watch. Now, let's turn to abortion politics. John Fortier, the leaked draft opinion from the Supreme Court, which would possibly overturn landmark Roe v. Wade ruling. Until now, it was seen as precedent, settled law, giving women a federal right to abortion services, at least during the first trimester. Take a moment to reflect on that leaked opinion. What are your thoughts at this particular inflection point, John Fortier? Do you think there's any chance that it won't be overturned, or how do you see this playing out? And what factor may it play in the midterm elections?
Yeah, I mean, we have so many big moments we think about in politics, but this one shouldn't be understated. This is a very significant, both substantive decision. We don't have the decision yet, but we're expecting it. We have maybe a preview of it, but also the politics of it, which are a little hard to assess, but it certainly will be important in many ways, and already you see the interest in it. So first, I guess I would say this, that we always expected that the particular case was probably going to be upheld, that the strong restrictions on abortion that were put in place by Mississippi in the case were going to be upheld. The question was, would the court go further and make the case that the underlying precedent, Roe v. Wade, which has other cases following it, but the basic principle that the states have limitations as to what they can do. They can't restrict abortion in certain ways, that might be taken out altogether. That's what the draft opinion would do. Again, it's a draft opinion. It's possible that one or more of the justices could shift. The thinking is that Chief Justice Roberts is probably not on that opinion, but also maybe against the particular state law, have kind of a more moderate, incremental approach to moving away from Roe v. Wade. But this would be a very, very big change. Now, while it's a very big change, and I think it is going to get political blood boiling and have an important effect, it's not absolutely clear that the effect will be so one-sided altogether. Certainly, all states might have to reconsider or are able to reconsider their abortion laws in ways that they were not with the Roe v. Wade framework. There are some states that are looking to put strong restrictions on abortion will be able to put more. Other states who have old laws on the books will be wondering, you know, what's state of the law when if this decision comes down the way we think it might. So we're going to see activity, and arguably it could be in all 50 states, and sometimes through the state legislatures or other ways, and that means it's a big deal. And you see, of course, people who are pro-choice being very activated by this decision. At the end of the day, though, I guess I'm not 100% certain that this is going to be the saving issue for Democrats in an election that, one, as Jim and I have said, has many other factors that look to be negative for Democrats. And two, there's a way in which this cuts both ways. And it's sometimes uncomfortable for Republicans maybe to be talking about some of these issues that they haven't had to because the court didn't allow them to talk about it, but it's sometimes true for Democrats as well. And I think you saw that to some extent in the Senate and in the Congress, where trying to come together as a party might actually put the Democrats in some places that are more to the left of the country on abortion, just as in some places, Republicans in some states may be more to the right of the country. So I think it's important. I think it certainly will activate people. There's a base of some very core Democrats who it may activate that might help Democrats in a downturn year. But I guess I'm not 100% certain that this is a momentous change that will change the direction of the election that we're seeing going for Republicans for other reasons.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for both the substance and the politics of the issue. Of course, as John Forte has said, this potential overturn of Roe v. Wade might not be a saving issue for the Democrats in the midterm election. Nonetheless, it has motivated many of them. And it's a major issue that you actually predicted in our last show, which, you know, was before the leak actually came out. You predicted that Roe v. Wade would indeed be overturned and that this would trigger quite a bit of controversy. And now we're seeing, you know, states scrambling. Some Republican states are trying to ban abortion outright or almost ban it. Democratic states trying to shore up their state laws now that the right to an abortion might come down to the states. Your take on all of this?
That's right, Carol. I said on the last show that it was inevitable, and I believe that what we saw with the leak, that's going to be what the decision will be. And if it's not what the decision is this time, it's what the decision will be next time. So we are on the cusp of having abortion going from being a constitutionally protected legal right that has been exercised on a yearly basis by about 850,000 women to an act of murder. We are very, very close to that. We are not there yet on a national level. There's no national law to do it, but there are state laws that are passing that have already passed that as soon as this Supreme Court case happens, that will go into effect. The political ramifications, I believe, in the short term is this will help Democrats in the midterms in state races, in governor's races, in state house races, because right away, this issue is going to be decided by state laws, where in the past it was a constitutionally protected right. So if I'm thinking of three states in particular where there's governor's races, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, abortion, I think, will be front and center in those races because in all of those states, you could see legislatures that would outlaw abortions, and outlawing abortion essentially turns it into an act of murder. In congressional races, it's a little bit more removed and abstract, at least right now, because there is a Democratic president. But you could see a situation where there's a Republican president in the future, or it could have an impact on the next presidential race because it would suddenly move to the national level. John was correct when he pointed out that in the Senate, an attempt to move a bill to codify the right to abortion was not able to garner the number of votes. The United States Senate, I believe, since the decision of Roe v. Wade in 1973, has only in two of those 49 years had a pro-choice majority. So the Senate has been a pro-life to sort of neutralish majority for really the entire period of Roe. So you could see a situation where with a Republican president, you could see some very, very restrictive abortion laws. And then I think it moves more to a congressional matter as well as a state matter.
All right, gentlemen, we'll take a very short late mid break. You are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way, and we're discussing the top issues dominating the U.S. political landscape. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also insert the following URL into your web browser, voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener we haven't heard from in quite a while, Ray Ondoro from Nairobi, Kenya. Ray, let us know how you're doing. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. To conclude the show, John Fortier, let's turn now to this horrific epidemic of mass shootings we're seeing in this country. In Buffalo, an 18-year-old motivated by fascination with firearms, propelled by white nationalism, racism, anti-Semitism, targeted a supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood to kill as many blacks as possible. Then we saw just last week a mass shooting at an elementary school in Texas by another 18-year-old, terribly reminiscent of that 2012 Sandy Hook elementary school shooting in Connecticut. Do you think any common ground can be found in Congress, notwithstanding that any one piece of legislation is not a panacea to prevent these shootings, but could help prevent the next tragedy, whether it's so-called red flag laws, universal background checks? What are your thoughts?
I think common ground is difficult on many issues, and I think on these issues as well. And I guess I always have some hope that there'll be something come together, but I suspect if it is something that's broad, it would be something small. And just to put the big issues on the table, I think Republicans are more likely to be supportive of issues related to mental health and school security. And that doesn't seem like it's going to cut it for Democrats who really want more direct regulation of firearms. There are some ways to find some middle issues on some of these smaller issues that we could come through with. But I guess I'm not that hopeful that we will move in that direction. You do have Senator Manchin, again, who is in the middle of almost every issue, given that there's a 50-50 Senate and that he is still very strongly supportive of keeping the filibuster, thinking the filibuster is something that forces the parties to work together, looking to work on some issues. He's worked with Senator Toomey of the Republican side before on some issues. That is possible that one could craft something. But if we really are going to get something that gets 60 votes, it gets through the House, it gets through the president, and frankly takes some time, I think that's going to be something not necessarily unimportant, but modest compared to the way people are talking about the types of changes that they'd like to see on either side.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, we see in other countries there are problems with people that have mental health issues, you know, instability. But many analysts would point out that only in America, with very easy access to guns, do we see these types of mass shootings. Now, John Fortier brought up the filibuster. We've heard that concept on this show many times. It's the Senate rule that requires a 60-vote threshold for legislation to pass, and with a very closely divided Senate, that doesn't look likely. He mentioned, of course, Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, who, along with Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema, do not want to change the filibuster rule. So that makes any kind of legislation on this very controversial issue very difficult. What are your views on impediments? And I may just say one thing with respect to school security and mental health, two issues on which many Republicans might be able to be persuaded. We note that in Texas, there was armed guards, but that didn't prevent this shooter from entering the school. So that's just an observation.
Yeah, I'm very pessimistic that anything will get done. And if something gets done, it'll be, you know, in the minor category, like maybe red flag laws, which I guess I suppose that are a little bit above the least common denominator.
Define that with you real quick, red flag laws.
Well, the red flag laws are essentially a way in which you can deny access to firearms through sales or have them temporarily confiscated. If someone like a loved one points out to law enforcement that, you know, my son or my husband or my spouse is severely despondent or mentally ill and may do harm to him or herself or others. So it is a way to sort of temporarily suspend somebody's rights to own a firearm or to briefly confiscate guns. I think it could work in some cases. Believe me, it's not a miracle. It's no panacea. I want to point out just a couple of statistics about where this country has gone on guns. So the first of these major school shootings was 1999. It was in Columbine in Colorado. And in that year, Americans bought 9 million firearms. 21 years later, in 2020, Americans bought 39 million firearms. So in that basically two-decade period, the amount of firearms that Americans are buying per year has quadrupled. And I think it's a barometer in this country of how people feel, how safe they feel, how angry they feel, how possibly revolutionary they feel. And I think it's an example of a society that in a lot of ways is very unsettled and feels a bit unhinged. The second thing I want to point out is if you look at state laws on guns over the last 10 or 12 years, and that is where most of our laws on guns reside, they have almost universally moved to make gun laws less restrictive and more open. So in a case like Texas, Texas was a place where in the past, if you wanted to carry a firearm, you needed to get a permit, you needed to have training, you needed to pass a special background check, you needed to get approval of law enforcement officer, and you could carry a concealed firearm. Now, you don't need any of those things, and you could carry the weapon, the firearm, openly. And that is the trend that we're having in this country, that it is more lax in terms of how you can buy a gun, whether you can carry a gun, whether you can carry it concealed or open, and also whether you can use it if you feel in some ways that you're under threat. So this country has been moving in the wrong direction for a long time on guns, and it is no wonder that we're seeing an uptick in mass shootings and an uptick in regular good old-fashioned garden variety murders.
As we close quickly, so back to you, John Fortier. Any final thoughts between now and the midterms? We also know that January 6th hearings, those hearings that will recount what happened on January 6th when a mob of pro-Trump supporters attacked the Capitol, resulting in many deaths, and many say it was one of the darkest days in our nation's history. Will those hearings make any difference in your view with respect to what happened on that day and any effect on the midterms?
I guess I don't think the hearings are going to have a huge effect on our politics, but to your general question, I think what we should be watching between now and the midterm elections in the fall is the status of Donald Trump. Both Jim and I have thought maybe slightly different ways that Donald Trump would be a front runner, likely to win a Republican nomination for president. And perhaps this midterm season, the primaries, what happens in the midterms will either embolden him or make others more emboldened. There's some who think that Donald Trump is a bit weakened and that maybe some others, some stronger candidates might want to challenge him, but he still polls very well. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I think Republicans will do well in these elections, but in terms of the Republicans thinking about Donald Trump and how likely he is to be their nominee, I think that's one thing that we will really get a better picture of between now and November.
Jim Kessler, you get the last word on any fallout from the January 6th hearings and the status of Donald Trump between now and the midterm elections.
Carol, my views are evolving on this. I really thought the January 6th hearings were going to be a big nothing burger. I'm seeing, because of what we just saw in Georgia, that I think there's a little bit more discontent within the Republican Party about, frankly, Trump's obsession of the 2020 election and his false claim that it's stolen. That I think other Republicans are sensing weakness in Donald Trump, and a lot of them are hoping he was going to go away, and it's possible that the knives are going to be coming out for him a little bit. And then the final thing I just say about the midterms is, you know, this is going to be a tough midterm for Democrats. But in the last month or so, at least in the political battlegrounds out there, some of those gray skies have parted a little bit, and Democrats might not do as horribly as Democrats have done in the past when they've had a new president.
On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, thanks as always for a lively and informative conversation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.